From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The tiny but mighty phytoplankton live at the base of the food chain in the Gulf of Alaska. They're a food source for small crustaceans, which in turn feed small fish, then bigger fish, then seabirds, and marine mammals. Each spring and summer, a large concentration of phytoplankton blooms in the Gulf. This year, researchers saw the biggest bloom they've ever seen, says Russ Hopcroft, a professor with the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Which theoretically means that we should have a very productive year at a whole bunch of other steps in the food chain later in the year.
He says the phytoplankton bloom in itself is nothing out of the ordinary.
Part of the natural cycle in the Gulf of Alaska is that when the light starts coming back in the spring and the storms start to subside a little bit, we get a big explosion of life in the phytoplankton.
Hopcroft says people on passing ships might not register the large amounts of phytoplankton, besides more activity from birds or fish in the area. But researchers keeping tabs on the blooms have noticed. They monitor the area each May, both with satellites and samples taken on a research vessel. This year, the bloom spanned from Kayak Island near Cordova all the way over to Kodiak, dropping off where the Gulf Shelf plummets into deeper waters.
I think we just had the right combination of some prolonged light and just enough storminess to keep things mixing a little bit, but not so much that they diluted and spread everything out.
Climate may also play a role. The Gulf of Alaska saw a years-long heat wave, nicknamed the Blob, which decimated some commercial fish populations and changed the marine makeup of the Gulf.
There wasn't much of a bloom during the Blob.
But this year, the Gulf has seen more normal temperatures, he says, at times even trending slightly cold. Hopcroft says the hope is the energy from the phytoplankton make it up the food chain, from the fish that swim in the Gulf's waters all the way up to the Alaskans who eat them. Thanks to KDLL's Sabine Pooks for that story.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
This past year has seen stories about phytoplankton that produce powerful biotoxins that cause deadly red tides or harmful algal blooms, the kind that are responsible for killing just about everything from tern chicks to human beings. But it's easy to forget that phytoplankton are also the foundation of the aquatic food web. All phytoplankton are plant-like organisms, ranging from tiny bacteria to larger but still microscopic diatoms. They produce energy using chlorophyll, carbon dioxide, and essential nutrients, just like land-based plants. They are then eaten by everything from the itty-bitty animal-like zooplankton to multi-ton whales. Small fish and krill eat them, and then they are eaten by bigger fish who are eaten by even bigger fish. Phytoplankton blooms feed the ocean. And because, like plants on land, they require nutrients like nitrate, phosphate, silicate, and calcium, phytoplankton thrive where ocean currents cause upwellings that bring these elements up from the depths. But about 70% of the ocean is stratified into layers, with warm water laying on top of cool water and very little mixing between them. Despite our present respite from the Blob, the long-term trend is warmer water temperatures. Scientists predict that as our planet gets warmer, this stratification with layers of nutrient-poor warm water laying on top of the cooler water will increase, and phytoplankton productivity will decline. This is not just bad news for the rest of the food chain, it's bad news for the environment too. Most of the transfer of carbon from the atmosphere to the ocean is done by phytoplankton. They use carbon dioxide during photosynthesis and incorporate the carbon, just like a tree captures carbon in its wood. About 10 gigatons of carbon is transferred from the atmosphere to the deep ocean each year when phytoplankton die and sink to the bottom. Warmer temperatures mean more stratification, which means less phytoplankton, which means less carbon capture, which contributes to the warming trend. Resource managers have begun talking about adapting to a warming planet. Adapting to a planet without phytoplankton might be pretty tough.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Matson, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
How much seafood do people eat on a day-to-day basis? And how does that number play a role in regulating clean water? As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, a Southeast Native environmental group is partnering with Wrangell's tribe to try to show how much fish coastal Alaskans actually consume.
According to a state formula used by environmental regulators, Alaskans only eat a bite of fish per day, 6.5 grams, or about a fifth of an ounce.
Which is a piece of fish, maybe the size of a quarter, but thicker.
That's far too little, says Fred Olson Jr., the executive director of the environmental advocacy group, the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. The number is a problem, he says, because it goes into a formula used by regulators to compute probable hazards from contaminants in fishy foods.
But the fish consumption rate, then, it's like the amount of fish people eat from the water sources would then dictate, you know, how much pollution you're going to allow into the system.
Humans are exposed to pollutants from obvious sources like the air and drinking water. But things like heavy metals can bioaccumulate in fish tissue, which we eat.
But it's a real fundamental nuts and bolts issue with, you know, where the rubber meets the road, where regulations are made and water quality standards determined by this formula.
Alaska uses the fish consumption rate of 6.5 grams per day per person as part of its water quality standards formula. If Alaskans do eat more than 6.5 grams per day of seafood, Olson says, they could be exposed to higher levels of potentially harmful substances than the state accounts for. That's especially concerning for rural, subsistence-based, and indigenous populations in the state that rely heavily on fish as a food source.
And so we're just trying to see or show how much people eat. And we figure it's more than 6.5 grams a day.
So the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission, a consortium of 15 tribes, recently received a federal grant for $130,000. Its task is to further investigate how much seafood the indigenous population in a coastal town like Wrangell consumes day to day. It will work with the local Tlingit tribe, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, to survey households in the community about their consumption of seafoods like salmon, halibut, shellfish, and kelp over a period of 2 years. Olson says the goal is to get a picture of the population by looking at select households and extrapolating from there.
You know, it's kind of like being a Nielsen family.
Nielsen families have boxes attached to their televisions that track their viewing habits. It's how the networks compute TV ratings. It's the same idea with this seafood survey, with a random selection of families indicating the habits of the area. Esther Reese is the tribal administrator of the Wrangell Cooperative Association. She says the tribe is excited to be working with SEITC on the survey.
Well, it's basically going to be an avenue that continues to help protect the environment, bring more focus on safe consumption of foods.
Reese says the partnership expands on the WCA's recent efforts to promote and preserve traditional foodways through projects like building smokehouses for tribal citizens and revitalizing Wrangell's community garden.
It dovetails nicely because it helps increase that knowledge of traditionally what we consumed, and it will help going forward to make sure that the water quality hopefully will continue to be such that we can continue to have we can continue to consume at the same levels that we are used to.
Other Pacific states like Washington and Oregon have average fish consumption rates more than 25 times higher in their human health criteria calculations. Olson says he hopes the survey will be able to help inform Alaska officials' decision-making.
Well, and it's so fundamental. It's like, oh, a little thing like your power cord. You know, without the power cord, your TV doesn't work at all. But it's just this little thing. You know, it doesn't really matter, does it? But all it does when you need to plug in your TV and see the fish consumption rate, it's a fundamental part of the formula. And so by keeping that low, we can pollute the water more. You know, it's real simple.
Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation, which regulates our air and water, says it's working to update human health criteria, including the fish consumption rate. It's listed as one of its top priorities for the next 3 years. But the DEC's Brock Tabor says it's difficult for Alaska to pin down what number fits the state best. Tabor is the Water Quality Standards Section Manager with the agency in Juneau. Fish consumption is a lot higher in rural communities than urban ones, for example.
Would I say it's 6.5 is reflective of fish consumption of the state as a whole? No, because we've done these studies and we've said that, okay, this number isn't reflective of it anymore. But now it's a question of, okay, what number would be reflective of the state? What part of the state are you going to be concerned with?
Plus, Tabor adds, the formula isn't a direct line between the fish consumption rate and pollution permits. It also takes into account body weight, drinking water consumption, and other possible exposure sources over the course of a day, a week, or a lifetime. The survey that SEITC is planning will be the first of its kind in Southeast Alaska, but other tribal governments around the state have looked into fish consumption of their citizens. The Chinook Tribe of Kodiak completed a survey in 2019, which found that respondents consumed about half a pound of seafood per day, and the Seldovia Village Tribe in Cook Inlet completed a survey showing respondents ate 100 grams of seafood a day. Tabor says the state is happy to take into account data from independent surveys as it works to develop new standards and a plan to implement them.
I think we've got a really good foundation of data, and we would essentially, you know, any new reports that came in, we would certainly want to consider, you know, not measure them together, you know, one against the other per se, but we would certainly want to consider the results of what one report says versus another one.
Olson says SEITC has hired a project manager for the Wrangell survey, and they'll hold a public forum on the project in Wrangell later this year. After that, WCA and SEITC will start hiring survey takers and collecting data. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
What?
Take it easy, Terry.
Okay. YouTube.